And I'm going to be leaving early, actually. And my man, DJ Danny Liberty, will be filling in the gap, as it were.
All you need to do is what you've always done. Nothing. Just go along to get along. And all they need to do is what they've been doing, running your world for you. And their timetable for your demise is coming soon. Saturn and his new world order. Better wake up. This is Jordan Maxwell.
Let's say that the aliens did land. Let's say that the aliens approached a group of men and women in certain structures of our society and said, "We are from another world. Take us to your leader."
We're here today to proceed with our plan.
Wednesday. This is November the 18th, 2009, and we've got a Word of Mouth Wednesday today. We've got a interview guest here live in the studio. It's Tristan Coffey, where we're going to be speaking about the Innocent Prisoners Society, and we're going to talk about an ongoing campaign with the headline Freedom, Not Torture, and the awareness campaign about Dr. Malachi Z. York, and we have some audio clips of Dr. York's teachings that we're going to play, and then we've also got a lot more coming up. The co-host, Robin Yento, has prepared an interview with Alina Chatterjee. We're going to try to have that later on. We've got also got a segment on Nelson Mandela's words on World Children's Day, which is coming up in a few days, and then we've got some more. We got some music breaks. We're going to have a few listings, and then we're going to get to our first interview, though, right coming up next, so just stay tuned to Word of Mouth Wednesday. We'll be right back. It is about 7:01 p.m. It's November the 18th. My name's Daniel Libby, and we're going to be right back right after this.
What is this belief thing? Faith and belief is a thing that you can't see.
Y'all better wake up.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here, and I've got a guest sitting with me here today in the studio at CKLN here. Tristan Coffey's here. And we're just about to talk about the group that he's working with and the project he's working on with the Innocence Prisoner Society. And I mentioned Dr. Malachi York, and you clarified that it's Malachi K. York, yeah. not Malachi Z. York. And yeah, and I just wanted to welcome Tristan Coffey here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, yeah, thanks for being on the show. And we got a serious subject here. Dr. York is also known as Dwight York, and I noticed that in the Wikipedia on him. There's a whole lot of information because he's a musician, he's a scholar, he's an honorary consul general, and now he's a prisoner. How did you start working in this?
Yeah, he's quite the Renaissance man of sorts.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, I came across him like many others. He's a prolific author. And a friend of mine passed me a book he had written. He's done extensive studies in Egyptology, and that really was always a course of interest for me as far as even when I was young. So I kind of got a hook in my nose, and I started reading. And I asked a friend of mine, I said, so what's going on with him? He's like, oh, he's in jail. I'm like, what? How's he in jail? And I just started to do more research. And, you know, I had the opportunity to come in contact with people who've known him personally and, you know, family members. And and something just wasn't sitting right. So I decided to get more informed as to exactly what was happening in this case. And I found out that this is one of the biggest mistakes that has ever happened as far as the United States judicial system is. It's ridiculous.
Right, we got to talk about that. But just to backtrack here, just in case people aren't totally sure who we're talking about, mm-hmm. Dr. York, I just wanted to ask you about one of the things that Dr. York's famous for, which mm-hmm. was the establishing of an Egyptian style theme park,
mm-hmm.
Tamre, mm-hmm. in the United States. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us about what that was?
Dr. York is he has a very unique approach to instruction and to teaching, where he'll actually whatever he's going through, he'll take the perspective of, you know what, you don't know it until you do it. So Egypt was once again very his course of study at the time. So what he did is he prepared an Egyptian style theme park, like you said. It's been misnomered a compound. But I mean, there was no, it was free of vulgarity. It was free of alcohol and liquor and all these things. And it was a place really where the black community in rural Georgia, I think it's important for people to know exactly where this is. This is the deep south. And it was just acres upon acres of, land that was for the most part even undeveloped and was free for people to visit. And that, I mean, a lot of inner city youth, they never had that experience. So it was really a place of awakening and spiritual awakening for many.
Yeah, it seems amazing from when you see the pictures that it's full of, mm-hmm. there's like actual pyramids and the actual stuff. Like, it seems like it's mm-hmm. it definitely seems like a park, like a and you watch video clips and stuff and people seem to be having a good time there, mm-hmm. but it seems like it's almost from the story that I was getting, it's almost from the establishment of the mm-hmm. place, they almost started the local community, or the local officials I should say, were started against it.
That's very true. There was one in particular. His name is Sheriff Sills. His last name is Sills, and he took it upon himself. At one point in time, he would come on. Like at the very beginning, he didn't know exactly what was going on, so he was very amicable. And then when he was aware of the fact that this was becoming something that was not necessarily he was going to get a cut from, first of all, there are actual members in his department that have been found guilty of drug possession and stuff like that. Very corrupt individual.
Right.
He took it upon himself at one point in time to become a building inspector, and he went above and beyond his sphere of authority just to become a thorn in the side of something that was really beautiful. I don't understand what his problem was, to be quite honest.
Right, and it is strange that they wouldn't that they're so against having this Egyptian style theme park when actually I looked on the map and you see a few counties away in Georgia they have this there's a really strange attraction called the Georgia Guidestones. I don't know if you've seen that one too much, but some of that one's still there.
That's a good segue.
Yeah,
that's an excellent segue.
Right, because it gets into this whole thing gets into this New World Order subject when. You factor in, I guess that was some of the prolific writing of Dr. York was about this.
Yeah. Basically what he was, Dr. York is the type of individual, he's not going to hold back. He's going to, and one of his favorite slogans was, don't believe me, check it out. And, you know, he was talking about what a lot of other authors are talking about who are actually getting acclaim now for. He was talking about as far as, you know, the establishment of a new world government and all these different things. It's quite interesting. Now, one thing to kind of put in perspective, it was not necessarily like, you know, go against the government or anything like that. He actually would tell his students, pay tax. That's going to pave the roads. That's going to take care of the, you know, the fire department and whatnot. What do you think this is? You're an American. You live in America. It wasn't anti-America. It was anti-corruption within the United States government, anti-corruption within any government. It shouldn't be there.
Right. And actually, I did get some, I got an opportunity to find a few, doing some research, I found a few audio clips of Dr. York, just in case any of our listeners are wondering who we're talking about, what he sounds like. And you can find clips of him on YouTube. There are a lot of clips out there. And this one's actually from a series called the Elohim speech. And it's from, I got a clip here from part 7.
Because Nubian is not really a color black. Nubian is really us. And I don't see nobody here black. I see some dark-skinned people, but ain't nobody here black. When you look in the mirror, you see brown. You see beige. We're light-skinned, dark, all the colors of all of the rainbow and every flower. And when they speak about the Almighty's creation and his color, what color is he? Don't say black. See, the Sunni Muslims again said Allah is the light. Correct? How can Allah be the light if he created the light? And in Genesis it said, let there be. But that was not the sun yet. The sun wasn't created after that. So if the Almighty said, let there be light, what state was he in? Darkness. But they made darkness bad. It's a cloudy day. Swarty. Shadows. Now Dracula got a black suit on. He only moves at night, which is no such word as night. It's called shadow. Stop saying night. There's no night. There's shadows. The sun never stops shining. It's just on the other side of the planet. We're in a shadow state. Start saying the shadow state and have make people ask you, what do you mean by that? And say, a sun never stops shining because the sun is nine ether. Nine to the ninth, power of nine. I don't know if you understand that. Mathematicians might know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so that was Dr. York there, and he's getting into a lot of topics, but I think the main one that he was getting into there and talking about was the concept of the Nubian people, and I guess it's sort of how would you describe Nubian?
Well, as far as the Nubian itself, one thing if I may clear up, the name Dwight is actually not his name. That's the name he's registered under. That's not his actual name. His name on his birth certificate is actually just York, and it was given later Malachi York, but his name's not Dwight. That's actually his son. But they can only take the land if it was under the name of the person that the land was in, and it wasn't in his name, so they used his son. That's actually one of the other things that was not really... there's so many mistakes. People probably don't believe it on the airways, but believe me, call me. Nuapu itself, the definition that was... given by Dr. York was Nuapu means to it means right knowledge, right wisdom, and right understanding, and this is kind of in a tradition of great black scholars and leaders and so on. So well, sorry, I shouldn't say black, brown, you know, according to the lecture there. Right. And basically, it was anybody can give you something, call it information, and what he was saying is that you have to go through a process of like a scientific method. You have to check, you know, you have to come start with your, you know, your introductory thesis or whatever, and then you go through the steps, logic, evidence, experience, reason, and then what you arrive at should be correct. And he took it upon himself to really reinforce this. And what you were listening to, he was speaking on the Judeo-Christian tradition of reinforcing kind of a slave mentality. And that it, there are many different translations of the Bible, and I don't want to really go into this topic too much.
Yeah.
But even in the title Elohim, he's going back to the Hebrew. He would go back to the origin, the source of things, and then would, from there, from a solid foundation of knowing exactly what the origin or the etymology or whatever it is, then you can start to have, build some type of solid foundation where it's correct information. So that's what really Nuapu is all about.
Right, and you can find more information on this on, I noticed that is on digitaljournal.com. There's some articles on some of the actions that have been going on in this city. What has the Innocent Prisoner Society been up to?
Well, right now we're really just, we're kind of buckling down, taking some time and preparing ourselves to go out and start doing some more work within the community and whatnot. Because what we realized, and it was a really big eye-opener just from experiencing, you know, having my personal experiences with the law, everybody has seen, you know, I'm sure, you know, unfortunately many of us have had the experience of having a loved one in a bad situation and whatnot. And it really, we are, as a people, we're kind of, and I mean just as a people, I don't mean any necessary color, I mean as a people, we're pretty ignorant to the law itself. And that's something that, you know, we want to go out there and educate people about the law itself. Not necessarily what or not the law can do, but how does it apply to you? Does the law apply to you? What are the meanings of these things? Because, I mean, it's a whole different language. They're speaking in legal terms. Well, you need a law dictionary. You need a legal dictionary. So you don't even know what you're being charged for most of the times. And, you know, at bail hearings, people just nod because they don't know, you know, and there's a whole lot of ignorance. So that, and of course, we stand in solidarity with Dr. York's family and friends and maintain that he is innocent and has been the target of slander and of the least of the things he's been targeted by the powers that be, because he was doing things that were actually working as far as the upliftment of people within his community.
Right. And we're getting the information out. We're talking about Dr. York. We're talking about the Innocent Prisoner Society. I just wanted to play a quick music track. This one's by Conspiracy. It's a track called My Transporter Room. We'll be right back.
Stars in the sky, we don't die, we multiply. There's more of us than stars in the sky.
Over the world's beacons and moons, eclipse the sun, shine on. Our transformers unite to destroy the one called Unicron. So far beyond the black holes, the supernovas explode. No film can hold my image, camera burns when lens exposed. Cruise control or warp 7, beam me up to be abducted. If you think in my direction, it's an IQ reduction to -100. Humphreys goes with thermal vision. My presence causes clocks and compass backwards spinning. Packing plasma cannon with a clip of radiation bullets instantly slip into the time stream like my nigga Bishop. Shifted to hyperspace in the Millennium Falcon and split atoms to travel galactic in tour. Only for the overwise, beyond all imagination, where I'm alive in all times. Few clues left for the weak field circles are the next Jedi Emperor to run the Death Star.
We don't die, we multiply. There's more of us than stars in the sky. We don't die, we multiply. There's more of us than stars in the sky. We don't die, we multiply. There's more of us than stars in the sky.
The ones we visit say fire in the sky. Some can't even describe what the miracle was right now. Hear and believe your eyes. I repeat, we come in peace, but human minds are so weak. The Supreme Being hooks us up with the busted break beats. Why, thank you. Take me to your keyboard to brew sound alchemy. Eternity begin. I'm calculating about 3. We discover our roots. The truth will cause total recall. Black last starfighter in space with no sound at all. Distort the perceived, mutate the deceived. And I'll explore and atomize the space pirates, Captain Kirk and Flash Gordon. Take me to your dealer and you'll get a girl with 3 breasts. Float in space and come smoke some of Saturn's best. Kiss gravity goodbye, matter undermined. Overwise, we'll wait. Time is energy, so let me bring you through the Stargate. We don't die, we multiply. There's more of us than stars in the sky. We don't die, we multiply. There's more of us than stars in the sky.
Want some candy, savages, my specialty, check your cloaking device. Understand you never. Wait till the messages saturate weighing. Beat your imaginations into next step to alien beats. So by first translate, they'll be amazed. Impaled on a spike. The predator thinks the prey tastes better with ketchup, but more relentless. You saw similar beings, but you are on your independence. Holy notes and tones from Seraph and Coulter for Mega Maximize. Apathy entangled spoken notes spectacularly. My rival psychology combined with conspiracy intervention divine. mind. Bless my beloved genetics. Twinkle, twinkle, let's open the seventh seal. Until you're standing over the unknown, it's denied, but you do care. In a minute, the real visitors from beyond come here, possibly aware. Such as the universal secret answers left to wonder. Peace to all, Stubbs, Psychology, and Danny Glover. We don't die, we multiply. There's more of us than stars in the sky. We don't die, we multiply. There's more of us than stars in the sky. We don't die, we multiply. There's more of us than stars in the sky. We don't die, we multiply. There's more of us than stars in the sky.
Word up, Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here. That was just Conspiracy. That was a track, Transport Room, the original track by Conspiracy. And I just wanted to play that track, actually, because Conspiracy was actually the guy who told me about Dr. York. I was working with him on a music video, and then he showed me this book that he's been reading, and I didn't really know about Dr. York, and then it sort of like it looked like a Bible, basically, and then I opened it, and it had all kinds of information. Like there was like a history of Earth and the galaxy, almost like in one book, and it seemed pretty prolific. And then Conspiracy told me that this is just one of his books, that he's written so many other ones, and then I started to do more research and stuff, I was wondering about where with the Innocent Prisoners campaign and the stuff you're working on with the raising awareness on Malachi York. How much of it do you get into the teachings and the views of Malachi York?
As far as our organization is concerned, we kind of distance ourselves from anything that has anything to do with his teachings. We're talking about him being innocent. As a human being, he does not deserve to be where he is. He's in the worst prison in the United States, and there's absolutely not a shred of evidence to maintain him within that place.
Right, and yeah, that's what gets the most extreme when you start doing this research, is the actual place that he's in now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you can read it. It's like it's on the Wikipedia page, and I know you can't trust everything Wikipedia's on.
Wikipedia.
They got the names all wrong, and they got one thing they do put, they have that it says that an ex warden of the ADX Florence Center said it was a cleaner version of hell.
Yes.
Which seems very extreme. And this, so could you talk about this, where he's being kept?
Florence ADMAX was built to eliminate all the, flaws within the maximum security prisons, which he actually was moved from prison to prison to prison. Florence ADMAX, Colorado itself, is the highest security prison within the United States. The worst of the worst are in there. If they could find Bin Laden, he would be there. We are talking about the Unabomber, Timothy McVeigh was in there. We're talking about the leaders of the worst criminal organizations that you could conceive of. It's basically when society doesn't know what to do with somebody, and they're awaiting death row, like that's where they're going to be put. And he's next to these people, and you know, he hasn't hurt anybody. He hasn't, you know, declared war on the United States. He's not a terrorist in any way, shape, or form. So it brings up the question once again: why is he in there? And it's cruel and unusual punishment, actually.
Right, and yeah, I guess the punishment does seem a bit severe with the amount of years.
Yes.
But he's charged with a serious offense.
Yes. But yes.
So could you talk about the offense and what what transpired?
Oh, absolutely. He was charged with several different charges. The initial charges were from a phone call, and that was transportation of minors over state borders for the purposes of unlawful sexual activity. Now, interesting side note, because once again, immediately the response to that would be, "Oh my God, that's ridiculous. Put him away, throw him, you know," and rightfully so if he was guilty. Mm-hmm. However, it came to light that there was a 4-year investigation after this anonymous letter, who later was one Pauline Rogers, found out who it was, who had her personal grudge with Dr. York for her own personal reasons. They sent this letter, and there was a 4-year investigation. Now, that in itself would make you wonder, because he was being alleged to have unlawful sexual activity, like we're talking about 7-8 times a day that were alleged by the witnesses. And the star witness actually recanted her story, but that's neither here nor there. Now, if we're to think about this, over a 4-year term, you couldn't, out of 7 times a day, over a 4-year term, you couldn't come across anything. Either A, you were looking for evidence and you couldn't find any, or you just didn't care. And in that sense, that would be reckless endangerment on behalf of the FBI and the Sheriff's Department for failing to do their duty. The second that there is a reported, there's any type of report, they're immediately to do a thorough investigation. And if it takes them 4 years to come across such blatant transgressions of the law, then perhaps they need to be doing a different job. You know, so once again, that didn't stand up. So what they brought in was RICO. And for those who are not familiar, that has to do with racketeering and money laundering. It was created to get at the big mob bosses, the Al Capones and stuff like that. Yeah, and they tried to make one of the organizations that he had founded. He's founded several, the Nwapian organization, United Nwapian Nation of Moors, of the Yamasi Native Americans of the Creek Nation, and. They tried to make it look like he was structuring money, so on and so forth. And once again, the star witness that alleged that actually came back and said that she was pressured by the FBI and coerced, and they said they were going to take away her children and all sorts of things. So it was falling apart.
Whoa.
So then the trial starts. If you want, the trial's a whole bunch of other stuff.
Right. Well, yeah. Well, I noticed. Yeah, I know there's a lot that about the trial. But one thing that really startled me when I saw it was that there's the actual day, or I think it was one of the days of the sentencing or the conviction was actually on like a holiday. It was like a
yes.
Wasn't
yes.
So that's like against the law and the
yeah yeah. He was sentenced to 135 years. I need to repeat that number if y'all didn't hear me. I didn't say 13.5 years, 135 years, on Martin Luther King's birthday.
Well,
yeah.
Well, and that just seems a bit like too much of a coincidence, maybe.
Very interesting coincidence. Yeah, yes.
Right. It's some extreme stuff going on, and the word is getting out. There has been actions by the Innocent Prisoners Society. There's mm-hmm. been actions
and others.
At the U.S. consulate, I think, in October, and then in September there were some actions at Yonge and Dundas mm-hmm. Square, and mm-hmm. and I guess is there a recommendation of a documentary to watch Mysteries Behind Closed Doors?
Yes, Mysteries Behind Closed Doors is one of them. I think there's some other ones coming out shortly. You know, it's very concise. It's very straight to the point. It doesn't deal with most of the emotional stuff. It's more, it's testimonial from people who actually knew him and worked along beside him and whatnot and their experiences and also legal information as far as what transpired, because the trial itself was closed to the public. Think about that. And the trial transcripts were sealed from the public, and the jury was anonymous.
Well,
yeah.
Well, it's been interesting talking about Malachi York's case, Dr. Malachi K. York's case on the Word of Mouth, because we haven't actually talked about Dr. York's case here. Well, we've talked a bit about Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Yes.
We've talked a bit
Free
about
him.
Leonard Peltier.
Free him.
we know that there's a lot of political prisoners, and I was just wondering, like, since I did some research and found out that Malachi K. York is involved or is an official with the Liberian government, would you call him a political prisoner? Or
what else would he be? Would be my question. As far as, well, it's obvious. I mean, if the court had cared about evidence, it wouldn't have got past the pretrial hearings. This is another staple case of a man who did something, regardless of whether or not you agree with everything he says. That's not important. What you look at is what his work ethic is, what he did for his community, and because he was not giving in to some of the corrupt individuals that existed within his area, he's now there. And yes, he is. He was an honorary consul general. He was a Liberian diplomat. Unfortunately, the position that he was given was more of an honorary position. It was in response to his humanitarian work that he had done in Liberia. He set up a school and a hospital and stuff like that, the Amin Institute. And in 1999, I think it was, he became an honorary consul general. But that doesn't give him diplomatic immunity or anything like that. But there are both in Ghana and Liberia, there has been a response. And there have been government liaisons to visit him and whatnot. Yeah.
Nice. And we've been talking about a very serious case here, with the case of Dr. Malachi K. York, and you can do research. You can find timelines from 1993 to 2009. You find out that's where you can get the story of the creation of this Egyptian theme park, and then the crackdown, the legal crackdown, and then the past years seem to have been extreme. He's now in the super maximum security prison, the biggest one in the States, but he had been moved around for a while, and then and he seems to be there now. But then I guess you have been I think you mentioned before that he's got the medical condition. That's one of the reasons.
I'm not sure if I mentioned it, but his medical condition is he has acute hereditary angioedema. At first, he just had hereditary angioedema, but then because of his confinement, it's become acute over time. Over the past year, he's been within the corrections institution since 2002, and he has a condition, angioedema, once again. It brings extreme swelling and possible blockage of airways and whatnot. It's brought on by extreme stress and whatnot. He has been hospitalized in a maximum security prison. He was taken out of the super maximum security prison to a hospital because he actually had suffered a stroke. They're waking him up at all different hours of the night. They're trying to provoke this ailment. He was denied access to a proper doctor. Funny enough, that's one of the other things that we're trying to do, is at least get him moved to a place where they can actually treat his condition, because they're not treating his condition properly. We actually got a written note from the governor of Georgia, who was actually made the mistake of saying that they were giving him medication for his ailment. It turns out, based on our contact with the head of the Angioedema Society, if I'm not mistaken, please forgive me if I got it wrong, it's in the United States, who is actually saying that the exact medicine that they're giving him is one that will actually cause illness. Yeah, so it's a serious situation, and please get involved. Contact me. Get involved.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. How can people get involved? We've been talking about the Malachi K. York case and this Innocent Prisoners Society project. Mm-hmm. How can people get involved? Get the information.
Yeah. Right now, this chapter is very, very new. It's more established within the States. There are some branches that are also, it spans the globe pretty much. I mean, it's in London, once again, like the States. It's out here now. It's going to be spreading out other places. And basically, they can get in contact with me. I'm actually the, director of operations here in Toronto, and my phone number is 647-891-6014. Okay. If anybody has questions, it doesn't mean you have to, stop everything you're doing. Everybody has some goal in life. This is something that I found, and I said, this is something I'm willing to stand up for and inform people about. Doesn't mean you have to donate. We're not interested in any money right now. Right now, we're not interested in money. We're interested in making sure that people know about his situation, because I think that it's something that needs to be addressed, as well as, even some of the other people that you had mentioned, Amir and Matulu, and the list goes on.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's why I'm glad that there is the Innocent Prisoner Society out there doing, getting the word out, and I'm glad that you were able to come on the show today, Tristan Coffey. Thanks a lot for being on the Word of Mouth today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. And that was Tristan Coffey of the Innocent Prisoners Project. We're just going to throw it to a music track, and then we got Robin Nieto is in the studio, and he's got a guest here. So we're just going to play a quick track, and then we'll be back with some more Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're just going to play a track, a throwback to 2007, live at Manifesto. This is stolen from Africa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fists up, yeah. Fists up, yeah. Read off, yeah. Fists up, yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Life's a paper chase spent only on the surface. Learn the art of war and how to slither with the surface. Need to fight the power, need the paper, love the hustle. Hustle for a paper, need the paper for a purpose. Papers from the gods, you got me calm and collected. Reflected to my history,
unknown like my misery.
Selected by my melanin,
the slave in the hot sun.
Crave shiny things, hot guns throwing
pops up.
Locked in the hot slums,
fingers when the cops come.
Plantation thinking,
my people are sinking.
B-Y-T-A,
we don't play as practice.
Black magic, rely on sweat
taking action.
Hunting from a rooftop,
calling out a new shot.
They killed Luther King, Gandhi,
G, even Tupac. See me?
Study the TV.
Watch the police.
Roll with my codeine, hey, out of country.
Hey, hey, B, B, Black, Y-T-A, you taking action. Where are my people at? Yo, B, B, Black, Y-T-A, you taking action.
Where are my people at?
Yeah, fist up, yeah, fist up, yeah. Read up, lift up, fist up, yeah. Fist up, yeah, fist up, yeah.
Read up, lift up, fist yeah. up, yeah.
Pick up the bloodstained banner while I channel my anger. The passing of the torch banner illustrated through stanzas. Voice, voice, one boot, and the message disputes. Overseas, they stand true.
Cocktail ready to shoot.
Televised, westernized, devil's pie. My rentals rise, keep an level eye with my car and rag.
It's all bad.
My brother's keeper from the Grim Reaper, permanent sleeper. Coming off balance like the scales of a Libra. Born in the sin, as a scribe, through biblical pain and slave check. Been in my way to defense of tainted history.
Caledonia's six nations.
Been patient, battling, insane for ages.
It's major.
We coming for that colonial paper. We build a heart ourselves while you're praying for a savior. Not tied by the fire, but the ruling desires. It's time to mobilize, you know the signs. B, Black, YTA.
You taking action, where my people at?
B, Black, YTA.
You taking action, where my people at? In the most multicultural city in the world, our curriculum does not reflect the multiculturalism. Tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
Hello and welcome back to Wednesday Word of Mouth. I am Robin Nieto here in the studio with Alina Chatterjee. She is the Director of Community Health for Toronto Community Housing. One second. I think this is my mic. There we go. Okay. We'll share this mic then. All right, but before we get into that, I wanted to, into the interview with Alina, I wanted to talk a little bit about the news when it comes to FIFA's World Cup. According to Tim May, a sports expert formerly here at CKLN, tells me that 12 countries today are hitting the pitch to try to make the six spots left open at FIFA's 2010 World Cup. This is big news for communities here in Toronto. Ukraine versus Greece, Algeria versus Egypt, Bosnia, Herzegovina and versus Portugal, Slovenia versus Russia, Uruguay versus Costa Rica, and France versus Ireland. Big stuff at stake today for these countries who are trying to make the six spots left at FIFA's 2010 World Cup that's taking place in South Africa between June and July. And moving on, the reason why I mention this is because Alina Chatterjee, who's from Toronto Community Housing, will be hosting a launch of the Live to Play Children's Soccer Tournament. That's going to be launched this Friday, and this Friday is Universal Children's Day. So Universal Children's Day, just to give you some background, was started in 1954 when the General Assembly recommended that all countries institute a Universal Children's Day to be observed as a day of worldwide fraternity and understanding between children. It recommended that the day should be observed also as a day of activity devoted to promoting the ideals and objectives of the Charter and the welfare of children around the world. This Friday, November 20th, marks the day on which the Assembly adopted the Declaration of the Rights of the Child in 1959 and the Convention on the Rights of the Child in 1989. So that's the Live to Play Children's Soccer Tournament to be launched this Friday morning at Winchester Public School in downtown Toronto. And we have Alina Chatterjee, who is the Director of Community Health at Toronto Community Housing, to tell us about it.
Hi, Robin. Thanks so much for having us on this evening. The Live to Play tournament is actually something quite unique and special for Toronto Community Housing. We've entered into quite an amazing partnership with the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund. And the intent of this partnership is to advance our children and youth strategy that we've been implementing over the last little while. Let me tell you a little bit about Toronto Community Housing. We are the largest social housing provider in Canada and the second largest in North America. We have communities all over the city of Toronto, and although our primary work is around housing, we have a really strong mandate to help in building healthy communities. Part of that direction is in working with different partners and stakeholders to figure out different ways that we can engage people in our communities to be active citizenry. The reason why this particular initiative is really important for us is because it will really help us identify opportunities for children to develop into young leaders. We have been working with the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund over the last little while to develop a quite robust program, I would say, and it begins this Friday with the launch. In terms of what we're hoping to see happen over the next little while, we will be having soccer tournaments in different priority neighborhoods across the city. We'll be working together to engage parents and children in these activities. And we're also hoping to raise funds to send 10 children overseas with chaperones for the World Cup that'll be happening in 2010. So just a pitch for that.
So that's the, this is what you call the Live to Play Children's Soccer Tournament. Tell me something about Toronto Community Housing. You said it's the second... one of the largest housing providers in Canada, and you have these programs happening. Tell me something about, how is Toronto Community Housing different from other, housing providers, say, across Canada or across North America?
Toronto Community Housing has developed what we call our community health strategy, and what that is basically a way for us to guide a level of activity and investment in social development activities. And that has, I guess that spans a range of different initiatives where we try to create opportunities for tenants to come together to organize on issues that impact their lives. So we have different pillars and different ways that we do this. We have a formal governance system which allows us to have tenant representatives that organize within their communities to help make decisions on local issues. We also have more recently identified areas of investment around supporting tenants to organize on other issues that would assist them in having access to civic systems. So, for example, issues of social justice, issues of civic engagement, community economic development are some areas of that work.
No, it's very interesting just because the scope of Toronto Community Housing is so large. Toronto Community Housing talks about priority neighborhoods, and I've heard the term priority neighborhoods quite a bit. Can you tell us something about what priority neighborhoods mean?
Priority neighborhoods, or the inner suburbs, are basically communities which are significantly under-resourced. So we have a number of different communities, and it actually has a strong overlap with the City of Toronto's 13 priority neighborhoods, which they've identified as being a focus for their neighborhood action efforts. And the reality of some of these communities is that there are really diverse populations living there, many of them living in in low-income communities, but many of them living in conditions that are really challenging in terms of facilitating integration into regular city life. So, for example, the amenities that downtown Toronto sees are certainly not the same as what one would see in some of these priority neighborhoods. In some cases, families and children would have to take two buses to get to any particular service, be it a library or a grocery store or whatever the case may be. So there is a focus on some of these neighborhoods and figuring out different ways that people can organize to figure out how to hold systems accountable and to identify what they can contribute in terms of reshaping the ability of these communities to be healthier places to live.
So I heard some figures. I think you have 158,000 tenants, is it?
About 164,000.
164,000. Mm-hmm. And something like 6,000 children across the city. Mm-hmm. It's quite a few people. It's almost like a city, a small city unto itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in terms of allocating resources, you know, that's quite a few people. And from what I understand, to get into Toronto community housing is not necessarily an easy process as well. Like, mm-hmm. if you want to have subsidized housing, you have to go onto a wait list. So we're talking about quite a few people who have applied and are successful, and they're now living in these in community housing, something that a lot of people would love to have, but they haven't reached, they haven't been able to reach that point yet. What's happening in terms of support for people who live in community housing when it comes to, you know, allocating some resources for them?
Well, I think that's a really good question. And I think that's partially why we've made the investment that we have in terms of supporting tenants in not just organizing, but identifying their own assets and their own capacities and their own ability to influence systems. I think part of the challenge is a much larger and systemic one in terms of how the sector itself is supported and recognized and funded and resourced for a lot of this work. I think also there are tenants who have an incredible level of skill set and can teach us a lot about how we should be doing our business. And I think Toronto Community Housing has recognized that. And so one of the strategies, for example, in investing in children and youth initiatives is to build a strong leadership capacity amongst them and to have them identify for us what supports they require. And while our primary role as a landlord is really important, we also recognize that we need to work with other partners and with other institutions and systems and groups of people to work together, in fact, to improve the conditions for people living in these communities.
So if you're a tenant in Toronto Community Housing, you could get involved in one of these, in one of the neighborhoods, priority neighborhoods, mm-hmm. in tenant-led community organizations.
Absolutely, absolutely. There are groups of organized tenants across the city of Toronto. I think people, of course, people's worlds don't just begin and end with Toronto Community Housing. So there are a lot of active leaders who are involved in other things. And I think this our first step in making some of these investments is to identify who they are and to figure out how we can connect others to such leaders. I think also as well in terms of specifically around the children and youth strategy, we're really hoping to build, we'll use this opportunity in our partnership with the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund to develop a global partnership for North-South partnerships in terms of learning exchanges and things like that. The United Nations, one of their Millennium Goals is around developing global partnerships, so we thought this would be an ideal opportunity to invest in children at this stage who will soon become leaders in their own right and probably be very significant actors in their communities down the road. I think part of what's really important about this particular initiative is to get children and their parents involved who are physically active, globally minded, and have leadership skills to affect change in communities, both locally and internationally.
So so let's go to the actual Live to Play children's soccer tournament that's going to be launched this Friday, Universal Children's Day. It's open to all children, and I think, is it free?
Yes, absolutely free.
And so, essentially, kids can register for this tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they can.
And
we're hoping many will.
And then they can have, and then they'll be playing. And from what I hear, there are also from a press release that I actually have here from the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund and yourselves, they'll be able to. Not only play soccer, but they're also going to get a school-based program or a curriculum where during the World Cup they're going to be learning about South Africa, Nelson Mandela, his struggle for freedom, South Africa's struggle for freedom, and also what young people, children, are facing in South Africa today. I think statistics have shown something like 1.8 million children in South Africa are suffering from the effects of HIV/AIDS. I think in Southern Africa itself, according to the information I have here, about 5,500 children die each day of curable diseases. And Nelson Mandela himself in 2010 is on a mission to build a children's hospital to start construction by the end of 2010. So from what I see here in this information, I think these are your fundraising goals of the tournament.
Yes, they absolutely are. I think also what was really important for us is, as a public institution, we have a strong commitment to anti-racism. And I think the diversity of our populations, the organization has recognized that there's a need to foster an environment where our children can learn about their histories and understand the meaning of the contribution that Nelson Mandela has made in the world, and to figure out different ways that they can individually and collectively affect similar change. So,
all right. I don't know, Daniel, are we reaching our time for the interview? Or we have a bit more time? Okay, great. So, yeah, I wanted to get back into TCHC community just because it's such an interesting local angle. You know, 6,000 children. At what about the diversity of people who live in TCHC?
Well, to give you a sense, we have people from almost every country in the world. We try, in terms of our social inclusion agenda, we try to make sure that we translate everything into up to 18 languages in different communities. We provide interpretation for most large community events. So the diversity is very rich. Culturally, I think, you see it everywhere in the city of Toronto. You see the representatives of various communities coming together. And I think what's exciting for us is to take all of the differences and figure out different ways that we can build something new together. And I think that's part of the richness of what we're striving for in terms of these partnerships and other initiatives that we're investing in.
All right. So, Alina, I want to thank you for joining us in the program tonight. I wish the best in your launch this Friday. Again, it's the Live to Play Children's Soccer Tournament that's going to have a launch this Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. at Winchester Public School, which is a school not too far away from here from the Ryerson campus. That's at 10 a.m., and it'll be a launch to let the world know that this soccer tournament will be open to all children, at least for now, in Toronto. To register, and from what I got here is the website where you can get more information about the tournament. It's www.mandela-children.ca, mandela-children.ca, if you want to find out more information about this. And that's on Universal Children's Day this Friday.
Nice. And Robin, did you want to get into playing the Nelson Mandela clip?
Yeah, let's hear the Nelson Mandela clip about the origin of the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund.
Mr. Mandela, can you please tell us what inspired you to found the Nelson Mandela Children's Fund?
Some time before I became president, I came out of a Cape Town hotel after 12 midnight. On a very cold winter night, and a group of children of about 10 to 12 came running to me, and they asked, "Why do you love us?" And I say, "How do you know I love you?" They say, "When you got money from overseas, you divided it amongst us. That was the Nobel Peace Prize." I then said to them that, "No, everybody loves you, including your parents. The only difference is that I got money without working for it, and therefore I could share it with you. But what worried me was the statement which they did not articulate. What they were saying was that we enjoy no parental love and security. We have no future. We will never enjoy life as other children because we are the outcasts of society." That worried me. That night I couldn't sleep. I kept on rolling over and over again, because I could see the anxious faces of these children. I then decided to start a fund by contributing 150,000 rand per year for 5 years in order to start this fund. And of course, business inside and outside the country responded very well, together with some ambassadors and high commissioners. So we have now raised more than 120 million rand and distributed no less than 30 million to various charity organizations dealing with children. But that is the origin of the Children's Fund.
All right, Word of Mouth Wednesday, we're back here. Those are some words from Nelson Mandela on the World's Children's Day, which is coming up. And I just wanted to throw it to one other clip, because we've had a full show here today. We had two guests in the studio, and we had we still got a few minutes left, though. So I just wanted to put on another clip, and actually just wanted to play a clip that we didn't get to during the interview, the past interview that I played earlier. It's another clip from Malachi York, and this is some of the stuff that he's been talking about.
Faith is ignorance if it's any faith other than faith in the Most High. Why? Because the word ignorance merely means to ignore the facts. Ignorance, ignore. I want to know, because when I knew, I was like him. Back to Genesis, now the man is like one of us. He knows good from evil. Means he knows how to make decisions. How come we don't know how to make decisions no more? And if we don't know how to make a decision no more, then we don't know. If we don't know, then we're no longer in the image of the Elo, so we're no longer Elohim. We become worshipers of what everybody else is worshiping.
So that was from the Elohim audio seminar that you can find. You can find the clips on YouTube. That was from part seven, like the part that we played earlier during the interview with Tristan Coffey. And, of course, wanted to thank Robin's interview guest, who you just heard. That was Alina Chatterjee, who's the director of community health at the Toronto Community Housing. And the guest we had on earlier was Tristan Coffey. But we still got a few minutes, so I just wanted to play the last segment here that I cut together some audio clips on the fall of the Berlin Wall 20th anniversary, which took place a few weeks ago. And we'll start it off with the current Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, and then a response a differing view on this situation. So you get a bit of a divergent viewpoint on the fall of the Berlin Wall.
The wall the communists built, this wall, was more than a physical division. It symbolized another, darker view of life. It was the difference between whether the people choose who governs them or the government chooses the people by choosing who will live and who will not. The difference between a system that is at its heart good and a system that was evil. As Canadians, as conservatives, as liberals, as others, we are opponents. But we are not each other's enemies. We are each other's fellow citizens. We battle with ballots, not with bullets. One side wins and accepts the rights and the responsibilities of government. The other lives in opposition and in freedom to fight another day. And so it has been for over 140 years and even longer. And we are all the better for it. Friends, the Berlin Wall divided a nation, but its fall united a continent in a hopeful future.
So did the transition from communism to democracy and from socialism to capitalism bring everything the reformers wanted? While most in Eastern Europe say the move was positive, there are many who believe they were better off under the communist system. Others point to the continued threat of nuclear arms and conflicts on new fronts based on ethnic and religious tensions as a sign that major security challenges remain, even if they are no longer divided between the American and Soviet spheres of influence. Has the Western model been proved wrong?
We see clearly in today's world that the so-called West, Europe and the US have no longer the monopoly when it comes to offering role models to the world. And our model of how we rule and run financial markets have been highly questioned. And that is the reason why we have right now the G20, where we have to negotiate with others, including Russia and China and Brazil, for instance, which kind of structures we need into place in order to safeguard our economy in the future.
president. But one word about the financial crisis. I doubt whether the financial crisis, as we have seen it now, could have happened when there was still the competition of socialism and communism.
Peter, I have to... Yeah, thank you very much, though, and I thank you on that note. I have to thank all of you for taking part. We're out of time, but thanks for joining us.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're just almost running out of time here. We got a few minutes left, and I just wanted to make sure I thanked our guests again, because we had Tristan Coffey to start the show from the Innocent Prisoners Society project that's been going on in Toronto. It's going on worldwide, too. We're talking about the Malachi K. York case, and we might be getting in the future shows of something about the Innocent Prisoners Society, get some updates in the future. And then also, Robin Nieto, the co-host, was in today speaking with Alina Chatterjee from the Toronto Community Housing. And so that we had a full show here today, two guests in the studio, and this has been our November 18th show. I just wanted to make sure that I announced one event that's going to take place this weekend, Saturday. I just saw a posting for it. It's Form a Circle Around the Sri Lankan Consulate, which is taking place at 12:30 p.m. Saturday, November the 21st. This Saturday. So you go to 40 St. Clair Avenue West, and then that's where the Sri Lankan consulate is. And then this November 21st marks the 180 days after the Sri Lankan government pledged the refugees would be resettled within 180 days. Yet tens of thousands of Tamil families are languishing and looking for a way out, I guess. So there is a circle of hope around the Sri Lankan consulate taking place this Saturday. And just wanted to thank you all for listening, of course, to the Word of Mouth Wednesday for today, November the 18th, 2009. And my name's Daniel Libby. I wanted to thank Robin Nieto again, and thank all the listeners and everyone else who's been coming down to CKLN 88.1 FM, the studio, all the volunteers and all the people working here, and the students of Ryerson, and of course, the listeners. So we'll just throw it to our next show, which is The Blue Remedy, featuring the blues doctor, Julie Hill. Word out.